Accession number 27193, Reel 9.
Sergeant Major Corn, Reel 9. You were saying you went to complain to the Sergeant Major that your kit had been
stolen. That's right, yeah. And all he did, he just laughed. And that upset me. And I kicked the chair from under him. And old Bill Skittle was with us at the time. And because that then, they called him by Mick, you know, and he said, Mick, you'll start a third bloody war, he said. And of course, there was a sergeant who was going to have a go, and I was ready for him. And then he got up, and he apologised for laughing. And that was it. And so I said, go back and see that corporal again. So I went back and saw the Lance Corporal, and he gave us a name. Don't know what he's, I forget his name again. And he was a bit of a troublemaker anyway in the Lincoln. So he told us his name. And I said, where will I find him? He said, in a cafe up the road. So I went up there with Bill Skittle and went into this cafe, and there was a chap playing this continental billiards, you know, what they call it. And I just said, where's Corporal so-and-so? Who's Corporal so-and-so? And he said, nobody answered. And this bloke just carried on playing, because everybody turned around, you know, and looked. But he kept carrying on. So I went over to him and I said, you're Corporal so-and-so? Yeah, so what? I said, you've just stolen my kit out of the guard room off a truck. He said, no, I didn't. I said, yes, you did. No, I got hold of him. And, of course, he lifted the cue to whack me with it. But I beat him to the punch, put him down and whacked him again. And I got him by the scruff of the neck. And I said, no, where is it? And I'm going to belt him again. And he said, hang on, I'll tell you. So he went to a house and knocked on the door. And the old girl came out there. And we tried to speak. I couldn't speak English. I said, he bought some kit off you, you know. Anyway, yes, she said. Anyway, she brought it back. There was my kit bag and this radio. So I said, try to find out how much he'd given her for it, you know, she'd given for it. And anyway, I emptied the pockets of this corporal and gave it to him. She said, no, too much to him. I said, you keep it. Got hold of him, marched him down, took him into the guard room, put him in a close arrest. Mm. Went back and told the Sergeant Major, and that was it. So he had to go up, and he was in trouble as well. And then I got my kid back anyway. But that was my first introduction into the Lincolns.
Not a very fortunate introduction.
No, wasn't it at all. So anyway, the point was that we were billeting, because there was a curfew still on, round about, I believe it was 9 o'clock at night, where everybody had to be in billets by that time. And the people we were billeted with had friends of the cafe, and there were soldiers billeted in that cafe. And they were having a bit of a do in there, and it was getting on towards 9 o'clock. And then they locked the doors. Nobody from outside could come in. Only the people that were billeted there. And us were there with the friends. And along came the provost sergeant and put him banging on the door. Any soldiers in there? And so I answered through the door. I said, yes. I said, the people that billeted in here. And I said, nobody else. And he said, open the door. I said, the place is closed. I said, nobody here belongs to it. Anyway, we had to open the door eventually because you start banging on the door. And he came in and he said, who are you? I said, I'm Sergeant Combs, Lincolns, Essex, being posted to Lincolns. Bill Skittle said, who are you? He said, Sergeant Skittle, DCM, Essex. He said, you built it here? He said, no. He said, we're here with our friends. He went out, he said. I said, we'll leave with our people. He said, if you don't go out, he said, I'll make you. I said, hang a bit. I said, no need to take that attitude. I said, our people are friends of theirs. I said, and we're going back with them to our own billet. So he said, if you don't go, he said, I'll do you. So he took his belt off, no, Bill Skittle's got a step forward. I said, leave it to me. And I whacked him, didn't I? Bang out the door he went. I said, the corporal, put him on the jeep and take him back. Well, next day, we had to go in front of the commanding officer to be received in the battalion.
It's your first interview.
That first interview. So, the Sergeant Major marches in, Bill Skittle to me, and Vic Tyrrell. And he said, from the reinforcements from the Essex Regiment, he said to the lady, he said, yes, so and so and so. Well, we welcome you into the regiment and all the rest of it, he said. And we hope you've got it. He shook hands with us. And he said, now, if you go on, he said, the Sergeant Major will see you getting the cap badge and everything, you know. So out we went. And we hadn't been outside the door long. And the Sergeant Major marches in again. The Colonel looked up, he said, I've seen these three men before, he said. Yeah, but he said, these two are on a charge. He said, what for? He said, strike the provost, Sergeant. Oh, God, he said. So I said, tell us what happened. Well, he brought the provost sergeant in and he said he'd been on patrol, town patrol, and ordered us out of this cafe at curfew time. And he said they refused to go, he said. And he said, a step forward, he said, and we told him to get out. And he said, then that sergeant, he said, pointed to me, struck me. He said. So anyway, Colonel looked up to me, he said, what have you got to say? I said, first of all, he's not telling the truth. He hasn't told you what happened. And I told this commanding officer what did happen. And I said, he took his belt off. And I said, he's got to sort us out. And I said, I beat him to the punch. And I said, I whacked him instead. And he put him on his vehicle and told him to get back. And that was it. So he looked at both of us. He said, no, look, let's forget this altogether. He says, let's start afresh, he says. You're in the battalion. Now let's stay that way. We'll forget all about it. And of course, his provost sergeant had a beautiful black eye, didn't he? And it turned out he was a third-rate professional boxer. You know? So I said, oh, well. But anyway, that bloke never troubled us again. Never troubled us again. So anyway, we went outside, lined up, and then there was a colour sergeant came up, and he had these badges. And he gave us this badge, and it was a plastic, just a plastic sphinx, you know, with the Lincolns on it. He said, this, I says, and he said, we'll have your badge. I says, you're not having my badge. I said, brass badge from the day I saw, no, you're not getting this badge. He said, you've got to give one for the other. I said, if you want us in this regiment, give us the badge. I said, but I'm not wearing that either. It's a bloody plastic badge out of a sherbet bag. I said, I'm not wearing that. No, Bill Skip refused as well. And Vic. So the commanding officer came to the door and he said, what's the noise going nowadays, Sergeant Major? He said, they won't wear the badge. He said, so and so. Why won't you ask, sir? Not wearing the plastic badge. We're not giving up our badge for that. Turned around to Sergeant Major, he said, no, look. Let them keep their own badge, he said. Go down to the guard room, down to the quartermaster, get a brass badge, give it to the prisoners, polish it up and give them a badge. So that's what he did. You know, I had admired that commanding officer. He was so diplomatic in that, you know, he didn't want any trouble. Mind, he was a firm person because he'd been acting brigadier as well. But I thought a lot of him. I thought a lot of him. And the Sergeant Major at the finish, you know. So anyway, that was it. And from there, as we say, we got together. And then, as I say, we posted out to the...
When did you first meet your platoon then, your new platoon of Lincolns?
In the Lincolns? I was with the battalion and I said, when we got there, we both were in the same company actually.
So you both went to A
company? Well, it was both in the same company.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any specific platoon at the time.
Ah.
There was a sergeant in charge of them. And it wasn't till we went out to Egypt.
Yes.
Then we were allotted platoons then. Mm. And that was it. Within A company.
Did the company have a full number of officers?
Yes, they'd been brought up to... just to say that the battalion had been brought up to strength.
So does that mean they'd posted in officers on outside as well?
Oh, yes. Officers as well. And we had different men posted from different regiments. And, of course, they're all... single,
yes,
at that time, you know what I mean, because they wanted sergeants who were single, no what they call it at home, come into the what with experience. I had to have experience as well.
So it's experienced single men
that that's
they
right, they wanted for the what they call it. And anyway, as I say, when the atom bomb dropped, then they sent us out to to Egypt. We went from Calais to Toulon on the boat to Port Said, and we rode in cattle trucks.
What was the voyage like from Toulon out to Port Said?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
What sort of ship were you on?
Pardon?
What sort of ship were you on?
Well, I forget them. What do you call them? I did know it. I did know it.
Was it a trooper or was it a liner?
No, it was a troop ship.
Troop ship?
Yeah, it was a troop ship.
What was your accommodation like on the troop ship? Were you in hammocks or...
Oh, yeah, we had hammocks on that. Mm. Yeah, all down below, what do you call it, we're in hammocks. Mm. On the mess decks. Mm.
Was there a particular deck for sergeants, or were you mixed
no,
in?
No, we're all mixed in together. We're all mixed in together. Like, with cundies, you know.
Yes.
And, yeah, we had the hammocks. Some of them didn't sleep in the hammocks. They put the hammocks on the floor and slept on the floor or on the tables or something.
Yeah.
But I got this hammock and I found it quite comfortable, actually. Yeah. So, yeah, it was all right. Some of them got in and just fell out.
Yes.
Rewind, you know, but...
Did you make any stops on the way, or did you go direct?
No, I went direct, straight across to Port Said, that's it, yeah, went down.
What was your first impression when you arrived in Egypt?
Anyway, when we got off the boat,
yes,
that was it, and they put us on these cattle trucks,
yeah,
and down at the port. Then we went by train further. Mm. But on the train, you've got a lot of these gypos coming on, you know, trying to flog your stuff and nicking stuff off you at the same time, you know what I mean? Coming up and trying to, because you could see them pickpocketing. And Bill caught one chap and he got hold of him, because old Bill was a big fella, he's about 6'2", you know. And he got hold of this gypo and swung straight out the window off a moving train. Mm. And... But as I say, there were a lot of blokes were robbed, actually. What was going on there? Didn't know they were being robbed. Mm. Oh, nimble fingered, those gypos. But anyway, when we got there, and it was strange. And we got off of what they call them. We had to march down to a place called Sarafand, where it was a tented camp there.
Yes. Did you know what you were going to be doing when you got to Egypt?
Not really. We didn't know what was going to happen to us. From there, I know that we were in there for a while and they had a sort of open-air cinemas and that to entertain you and that. Mm. They kept you busy in sort of drill and one thing, you know, they're keeping the place tidy, you know.
Did you do any serious training of any sort in Sarafand? Did you do any training?
Not real training, no, not really.
No tactical training?
No. And then we marched again and we had to finish up at Ismailia.
Ismailia?
Yeah, the post was right at Ismailia.
Right. What was happening there?
Now then, at Ismailia, there was a German prisoner of war camp and there was an Italian prisoner of war camp. One of the Italians was near the sea. The Germans was quite a bit inland, and they'd built a stadium. Now the person that built that stadium, I think, was the son of the person that built the Berlin Stadium, and it was on the similar lines, you know. And they had a marvellous stadium there, football pitch and everything. Now then, the Germans there, the Afrika Korps. They used to march about and used to keep the place clean and did all sorts of jobs on there. And whenever the past the sergeant, one of our sergeants, saluted him, you know, and then just the marching past as what they call his a platoon or whatever it was, or a group, used to come, you know, come past you and they used to, eyes, long, links or eyes, or whatever the kind, you know. And that was it. But the Germans, they were clean. And there were, they used to do the guards on there, on the camp. And the Italians, oh God, they used to knock the stuffing out of them. They always raiding the Italian camp and knocking the stuffing out of them, you know. But anyway, from there we were, we had quite the time there.
What were the Italians like?
Oh, scruffy lot. They really were. They were wandering around. Well, they didn't do much to them at all. They had nothing much to do with them. But the Germans, they used to do most all of the fatigues and that in the camp. And they were very industrious as well, because they used to make them rings out of plastic. You know, they used to get the plastic mesh tins or something like that and then make a ring. And if I had a photograph, they used to take a photograph and put a photograph in the ring and that, you know, make them put. That was the sort of thing they used to do. And they were serving in the kitchens, officers' mess and things like that. But anyway, being there for quite a bit. And then we moved up to Palestine then, you know, went by convoy and all that. And the amazing thing was you used to get right away out in the desert. You couldn't see anything. And when you stopped, there was camels and you call it come from nowhere, you know. They were always, I'd say to come from out of the desert itself.
Was but this convoy of road vehicles, was it motor transport?
Just feet tunnels and everything.
Feet tunnels, yeah. Had they gone out with you, or were they provided later?
Well, they'd be provided when we're out there, actually, right. You know, yeah. Majority of them, yeah.
What did you know about Palestine when you set off?
Never knew nothing about it at all. We just knew that there was trouble brewing between the Arabs and the Jews and that. And there's a couple of gangs up there, Ogham's Vailumi gang and the Haganah. Yeah. I think the Haganah was the official, what they call it there. But the Ogham's Vailumi gang in the, another one named there. But they were the troublemakers then. Our first stop when we went there was at not Jerusalem. What do you call it? Nazareth.
Nazareth.
Yeah, in Nazareth. And I had then a defence platoon. And on there's a big sort of hill, a mountain, and on the top was brigade headquarters, and that was my job, was to guard brigade headquarters with this platoon. And then we used to go down into Nazareth and things like that. You know, there's nothing there. The transport was rickety old buses and just donkeys and that used to get around with. You know. And we found the places where Jesus and that was supposed to have been born, and you know, very interesting places and that. And then,
when you were doing this job, defence platoon, how big was the platoon? Was it a standard size platoon, or was it?
Oh yeah, just standard platoon. Yeah.
And what
about? Well, you had about I think it was about 48 actually. Right.
So a bigger platoon.
That's
than normal.
Right. Yeah, bigger than normal actually.
How did you actually go about securing the brigade headquarters? What did you have to?
Well,
do?
As I say, I had the guards. You had to put the guards on and pickets and things like that, patrolling as well. You see, so I used to have a roster. Used to do it and have them. Some were on guard, then others were on like a picket moving, you know, is what you call it. And you should have a couple of days on to those
there. How was the brigade headquarters housed? Was it in a building? Or
yeah,
it was a building.
Building and huts, I heard of buildings and that.
Was there a secure perimeter?
Pardon?
Was there a fence or a secure perimeter?
A perimeter. Yeah, what do you call it? Barbed wire perimeter.
Oh, it was wired.
Yeah.
So you've got a wired perimeter around the building.
That's right. Yeah.
And your
chaps. The old Dannett way, isn't that? You know.
Yes. And your chaps would be guarding the entrance.
That's right. And also patrolling around.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you have proper dug defence positions around the?
Oh yes, we had the permanent ones actually.
What,
you know,
which
defences. Yes. In an emergency, they knew where to go.
I see.
Straight away. They knew where to go, straight at these positions. Mm. And that was it. Yeah.
How big was the brigade headquarters? You have no idea roughly how many people had been working in it?
I couldn't tell you really. Yeah. I couldn't tell. It was quite a lot, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people there, yeah.
Were there ever any attempts to attack the brigade headquarters when you were guarding?
Fortunately, no. Oh. No, there's no at any time. Mm. We didn't have any trouble at all like that, no. And as I said, from there we moved.
And when you went down into Nazareth exploring, did you go on your own or did you go?
Oh no, there's always a couple of us together.
A couple of
you. Oh, you never let. Nobody ever went on their own.
Did you go armed?
Oh yes, always armed.
What was the sort of political atmosphere in Nazareth? Did you get a sense of that?
Well, at that time, you know, I think we were in a funny position because the British took over the mandate there, you know, as nobody else would control it. The Americans or no one, the French or nobody would have anything to do it. And we decided that, you know, the British had to take it over. And there's one thing about it, that we got on well with both sides. Mm. And we used to have the Arabs and the Jews. The Haganah, well, we used to visit around the villages and things like that to make sure there's no problem, no trouble at all, you know. And the same with the Jews. Was when we moved from there, we went down to back to the battalion to a place called Haganah. Mm-hmm. And
where was that?
That was in Palestine. Mm-hmm. It wasn't far from. God, blimey, what was it? Caesarea, not far from Caesarea.
Yes. That's on the seacoast, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And of course, in our camp were the whole brigade, the 9 Brigade, mm-hmm. which consisted of the Lincolns, the IORs, Royal Ulster Rifles, and King's Own Scottish Borderers. The International Brigade, they called it. It was 9 Brigade out of the 3rd Division.
The English, Scots and Irish.
That's right, yeah. They called it the International Brigade.
And they're all in one big camp.
Well, yeah, they're sort of... The Lincolns in that camp. There was a King's Own Scottish Borderers in that one. Mm. And then on this side was a Royal Ulster Rifles. Mm. And then I had a cinema in that there as well, you know. Well, we used to play football and everything like that. Of course, we were in the Y Division, the 5th Division.
Right.
The Y Division.
And what was this camp fortified or was it open?
It was all tented camp.
Yes.
Yeah. They had one or two wooden, what do you call it, like a sergeant's mess and the officer's mess.
Yeah, so some huts.
Yeah, that's all, yeah. And for their quartermaster stores and that, yeah.
What about the security of these camps? Were they defended or were they open?
Well, they just had the ordinary guard on the entrance, that's all.
Oh.
That's the issue, just mount the guard on the entrance and that was all. Mm. You know, each one had their own sort of guard, you know, for their own camp.
But, so you'd have sentries posted and...
That's it, just
guards.
Normal sentry, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all. But we used to play football and that, and we didn't do much training actually there either. But we used to have to go out on patrols and... was when they're having trouble with the Jews and the Arabs.
Yes.
Because they used to blow up these bridges, you know, to impede it. But the engineers, in a quarter of an hour, had another bridge built, you know. And we kept them apart a lot. And it was only that the Ergams Vailumi gang, they were the terrorist gang, that causes any trouble.
What sort of trouble did they cause you?
Well, as I said, there was sometimes trying to raid the camps and having a go at the Arabs and blowing up bridges and things like that.
Did they attack the Lincolns camp?
No, we never did attack.
They didn't.
No,
never.
We were very fortunate in that respect. As a matter of fact, I don't think any of our brigade at that time had been attacked, but apparently other what you call it had been. Right. The other ones.
And you mentioned going out on patrols. What sort of strength would a patrol be?
Oh, it was a whole platoon.
A whole platoon went out,
fully armed.
Fully armed.
That's right.
And would you be going on foot or on
no,
vehicle?
No, in carriers and vehicles.
Carriers?
Yeah.
And where?
We got sort of made roadblocks.
Oh,
and
I see.
Things like that, you know, and then anything coming down, stop and search.
Ah. Well, how would you set up a roadblock? What would be the technique of setting up a roadblock?
Well,
how would you lay it out?
We used to have either drums and that.
Yes.
Full of what do you call it?
Oil drums.
That's right.
Yeah.
Laid in that way, like that, you know, so that had come round them.
So it'd be a chicane in the road.
That's right. So you put one on that side, one like that, and of course you had the sentry there.
Through.
And then you had the people on each side guarding them. You know, if anything happened, that was it.
Yes.
So you had them all right.
When you did a search, you searched a vehicle, what were you looking for? What would you check?
Arms and anything like that. Yeah. Arms mostly, and explosives.
Mm. Do you remember, did you ever find anything on a roadblock?
Oh, yes, once or twice we did come across something like that. Mm. But the other thing was, where we used to go out, and we used to have to go into these Jewish settlements.
Mm.
And we were looking for arms and everything there.
It's just a search operation.
Oh, yeah. And didn't have much trouble at all with them. But anyway, there's one particular camp we went into, and went into this, what do you call it, you know, and it was a concrete block, which apparently had been, I said, they said it was for a searchlight and thing like that. And we looked around the camp, we couldn't find anything. And then, you know what British soldiers are. Kiddies were on these maypoles. Of course, you got the British soldiers, you know, helping going on and, you know, having a go as well with the kiddies and that, playing with the kiddies. And one bloke happened to put his rifle against the pole. But same over, he says, Sarge, he said, that's empty. That's, he says, it's not a solid pole. So anyway, we had a good look at it. And then we traced something from the pole to this building. We went into the building and found this concrete slab. And had big bolts on it, you know. That was
yeah.
So we looked at it and said, well, there's nothing there. And then in a corner was a big spanner. One of the blokes got hold of this spanner and came over. We tried all these bolts. We tied this particular one and it gave. And then they just pulled it and it opened.
Oh.
And down in there was a cellar, all full of arms and everything. So we whipped.
Sounds like a real find.
Oh, yes.
Roughly what some numbers
are. But the point was that the Jews were very, they were ingenious with things like that.
Yes.
Them, you know, they, they couldn't admire them for what they did. But, of course, we had to arrest them, what they call these as well, you know.
Did they go quietly?
Oh, yeah, they had no trouble. Once they're being found out, you know.
What sort of weapons did they have in there?
Oh, they had rifles and machine guns and everything down there. A load of ammunition.
Really? What sort of numbers of weapons do you think you had?
I think we got over, 120 rifles, I think. It was around about that, and about three machine guns and 15 Bren guns.
That's a company's worth of arms.
That's right. And, oh, yeah, and 2-inch mortars.
Were the weapons all British?
All British.
And the ammunition?
That's right, yeah. All British. Only picked the best weapons, didn't they?
I think they were picking what they could get, probably.
Oh, yeah, they'd get anything. But it was some years later that I went out there with invite from the Jewish, what do you call it, when they handed the anniversary of handing over the mandate, 1978, I think it was, something like that, 87, something like that. And I represented the Lincolns and that, you know, and the British. And there was a sergeant from the Argyles, there was two of them, and then we had the officers. We had a brigadier, colonel, majors, captains and medical corps, and we all went out on that journey, and we went on a tour all over Palestine. We went all over visiting all the places, Jerusalem, Haifa, Nazareth, down to the Dead Sea and everything. And wherever we went, we got a good reception from anybody, you know. And even I swam in the Dead Sea, or tried to. Come out full of salt and bathe yourself for the old showers and that. And we had no trouble, and we used to stop as the bus used to go out into the desert, and the Arabs were there, you know, like Arab villages, and they were out there trying to flog you or anything, you know, but we had no problems at all, you know, not at all. But when we went into Jerusalem, and you saw the Jewish soldiers marching around armed and things like that, you know. And there was always trouble ending there. Yeah. I even went to where they made had a diamond, what they call it, the flogging diamonds there, if you wanted them. God. Some of the officers did buy some, by the way, but I didn't. I couldn't afford them. But as I say, we had a marvellous time. You know, we went to all of these Jewish kibbutzes and things. And it was amazing. The way they turned a desert, arid desert, into a cultivated area. You see, they're all in these kibbutzes, but all the way around them was irrigated. And what I could gather from the Jewish people when we used to give us the lectures was that they wanted to live in peace, and they wanted the Arabs to live with them. but the Palestinians wouldn't do that. There was somewhere we went on the borders of Syria where they had an outpost. You should read in the news where it'd